This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 22, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. Prosecutors typically have immunity when they fail to do one of their constitutional duties, that is, turning over exculpatory evidence to the defense. And failing to turn that evidence over can mean the difference between winning and losing big cases. David Ritgers, legal policy analyst at the Cato Institute, talks about the Supreme Court case of Connick v. Thompson and his related article in the latest edition of the Cato Supreme Court Review.
In 1985, John Thompson was tried and convicted by the New Orleans District Attorney's Office for both armed robbery and murder. These were actually wrongful convictions. Armed robbery case, there was a piece of evidence associated with the armed robbery case. It was a swatch of clothing stained with the robber's blood. The prosecution had this piece of evidence, and the blood test results, the blood typing results, came back. And the prosecutor had the evidence, and on the day of trial, checked all of the evidence out of the police evidence room, and then checked all of the evidence, with the exception of this blood-stained swatch of clothing, into the courthouse evidence room. Without this piece of clothing, which, had it been tested and had it been provided to the jury, would have shown that he had a different blood type than the perpetrator of the crime, well, he would have been exonerated had that been produced to the jury. It was not produced to the jury. He was convicted. And then because of that armed robbery conviction, he did not testify in his own defense at the subsequent murder trial, meaning he was convicted of that as well. So he spent 18 years in prison, 14 of them on death row, literally an 11th hour save. A private investigator working on his case discovered the blood-stained swatch of clothing. The blood test was conducted, and ultimately the Supreme Court of Louisiana threw out his conviction. He was retried for the murder, was acquitted by a jury in short order, and he promptly filed suit against the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office. He succeeded and was awarded $14 million by a civil jury, the equivalent of $1 million for each year that he wrongfully spent on death row. And this March, the Supreme Court overturned that award of $14 million on the grounds that that municipal liability in this instance did not flow from a custom or policy that the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office had in effect at the time.
Now, prosecutors are supposed to hand over evidence that could exonerate somebody in the defense. Long-standing practice that occurs in discovery, I suppose. Why didn't it happen in this case?
Well, it's a constitutional duty mandated by the Supreme Court's decision in Brady versus Maryland. Connick v. Thompson has to be viewed really as the collision of two lines of precedent, one with regard to prosecutorial immunity and one with regard to municipal liability and the immunity exceptions that have been created by Supreme Court precedent. With regard to prosecutorial immunity, the Supreme Court said in Immler versus Pachman in 1975 that that prosecutors are absolutely immune, which is obviously above and beyond the qualified immunity that police officers enjoy, but absolutely immune at civil suit for their core prosecutorial functions. And there was a sharp dissent by Justice Byron White, certainly no bleeding heart liberal, saying that in the context of Brady violations, that this would discourage essential disclosure and could lead to wrongful convictions. And the years since have proven that correct. And Brady violations actually rank as among the top forms of prosecutorial misconduct in any number of studies that you would look into this. That is at the top of the list. On the other side of the equation, in terms of municipal liability and immunity, the Supreme Court said in the Monell case that there has to be a policy or custom in effect that created the constitutional violation that the citizen is basing their suit on. So essentially, all of the quote unquote isolated incidents do not lead to municipal liability. And in a subsequent case, following very closely on Monell in the City of Oklahoma versus Tuttle decision, Justice Stevens, much to his credit, dissented, saying that this was judicial lawmaking of the most blatant kind. That the statute creating civil rights lawsuits, Section 1983, as we call it now, was passed in 1871 as the Civil Rights Act of 1871, intended to be the teeth of the 14th Amendment to ensure that municipal and state officials did not violate the constitutional rights of their citizens. To constrain liability through the custom or policy holding means that there will be repeated and certainly not isolated violations of constitutional rights over time that will be that government will not be held accountable for.
And you could establish that these abuses occur over and over and over again without having it be a part of a custom.
Yes, and they certainly have. In the majority opinion, Justice Thomas tried to parse the difference in the other wrongful convictions stemming out of the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office, saying that, well, they didn't come from blood typing discrepancies. So there's no reason for the office to be on notice that this blood typing test would be important. Well, that's nonsense as a constitutional matter, because the means of delivering constitutional injury does not create a difference in how we would conduct the analysis of whether someone's rights were violated or not. And the other cases that were a prelude to the violations in John Thompson's trial hinged on these were cases that were overturned. They hinged on false identification by eyewitnesses, something that we now know to be pretty unreliable as a scientific matter. Well, So the actually, much more accurate blood test would be something that you should be more inclined to disclose because of its very probative nature. And to say that the means of delivering a constitutional violation, that the difference in the means in delivering it should fundamentally change the analysis, is like saying, well, the municipality had four officers shoot to death illegally and unconstitutionally fleeing petty thieves, but because this officer had the good sense to run down this particular person with his police cruiser, then the municipality should be relieved of liability. That's really nonsense.
Prosecutors want to win cases. Defense attorneys want to win cases. Prosecutors have this constitutional responsibility to hand exculpatory evidence to the defense team, but it doesn't happen in many cases. And it seems obvious that if you're protected from any liability for not doing so, that you're not at least going to focus as much as you should on that part of the process.
That's absolutely correct. We ask prosecutors to fulfill two roles. We ask them to both be a party to an adversarial process where there is every incentive to win. And at the same time, we ask them to be detached members of a quasi-judicial set of officials who have the discretion to prosecute or to not prosecute. And even though the pressures for them to win and to get a conviction will be at their apex in serious crimes, particularly capital cases like murder, why would we be surprised that the lack of an incentive of a civil civil liability incentive to be truthful in making this disclosure doesn't have the effect of producing a lot of wrongful convictions? So let's take a look at the incentive structure. Because of another case at the Supreme Court involving some of the same prosecutors coming from the same office, Kyles v. Whitley, the investigation process is also subject to the burden under Brady versus Maryland to disclose evidence, exculpatory evidence, to the defense. So police officers can be held liable in civil suit for failing to disclose Brady evidence to the prosecutor and subsequently to the defense. The prosecutor has the constitutional duty to seek out exculpatory evidence in police files and hand this evidence over to the defense. They are the prime mover of the system, and yet they are absolutely immune for failing to perform this constitutional duty. So, you know, why should it be any wonder that these constitutional violations happen? Now, let's just substitute, hypothetically, a police investigator who works for the district attorney's office, not an uncommon arrangement, who did what the prosecutor did in this case. So this police officer checks all of the evidence out from the police locker, all of the evidence but the one really important piece for the defendant into the courthouse, conceals it from the prosecution and the defense. He is, if this is discovered, he can be held liable in a civil suit. But because the prosecutor did it in this case and then further consummated this constitutional sin by presenting the state's case to the judge and jury while failing to disclose this constitutionally required evidence, he is absolutely immune from civil suit.
Going back in time, what was the intended relationship that prosecutors, cities were to have with citizens when it comes to their liability for violating the rights of people?
The law creating what we now call Section 1983 suits or civil suits for violations of constitutional rights by public officials stems from the Civil Rights Act of 1871, which was one of the laws directly intended to carry out the 14th Amendment and create liability on the behalf of state and local officials for violating the rights of their constituents. At the time, there only existed three types of immunity. There was judicial immunity, which applies also to legislators and officials that have a great discretion in policymaking at the top of the the governmental pyramid. In the middle, there was what we call quasi-judicial immunity, which corresponds to what we would now call qualified immunity. They have some discretion, but they can't violate constitutional rights out of hand. And at the bottom of the pipe, we would put witness immunity or defamation immunity, which was simply the immunity from suit for statements made in court so that we could encourage disclosure. Since that time, we have skewed the immunities. We have misread the common law as it was in 1871, when municipalities were routinely held liable for violating the rights of their constituents. And prosecutors are now said to have quasi-judicial immunity, which at the time, again, was the parallel to qualified immunity, and that this quasi-judicial immunity is now absolute immunity for core prosecutorial functions. So it's not an originalist tact to say that prosecutors should be absolutely immune. Justice Scalia has said separately in a dissent that he has no doubt that had the prosecutor's office existed then as it does in its current form, that they would only have qualified immunity. The bottom line is that. The charge of judicial lawmaking of the most blatant kind is not something that I would lay just on the municipal liability side of the house. Prosecutorial immunity should consist solely of the civil of the common law immunities that existed at the time. The immunity from malicious prosecution, so that every not guilty verdict didn't turn into a civil suit, and defamation immunity, which just protected statements made in court to encourage disclosure. But absolute immunity for core prosecutorial functions, including the suppression of exculpatory evidence, has certainly damaged the criminal justice system and created systemic incentives facilitating wrongful convictions.
David Ritgers is a legal policy analyst at the Cato Institute. You can read his article on Connick v. Thompson in the latest Cato Supreme Court Review, available at cato.org.